joining us today on Lattes with Leaders.
I'm Zaina.
And I'm Trisha. And we're excited for you to join us as we catch up over coffee with CEOs and executives from diverse backgrounds and industries.
We seek to discover what is unique about each leader and educate you guys on new and interesting topics. Our conversations seek to enlighten and inspire people from around the world to realize that ordinary people can achieve extraordinary things.
For me, product management basically boils down to structural problem solving and iterating till you make the end consumer or customer happy.
In this episode, I speak with Purvi Srivastav, a seasoned product leader with over a decade of experience at global tech companies such as Microsoft, Salesforce, HubSpot, and Meta. In her tenure, she's successfully proven product market fit, driven business growth, and implemented a product-centric culture. Purvi has also advised and invested in several tech startups and is a member of the Forbes Technology Council. I joined Purvi today to discuss what product management means and how to build successful products in today's difficult economic environment. Stay tuned. All right. Welcome to Lattes with Leaders. Thank you for joining us, Purvi.
Thank you for having me. Very interesting names.
So to start off with, I'd love to explore a little bit of your journey.
I started my journey back in 08 as a computer science graduate. I started at Microsoft back in India, but we're talking 08, and this is reminiscence of the time when the big crash happened thanks to a lot of financial issues and the Lehman Bros crisis. So I, 6 months into my job, I think it was late 2009, I was asked whether I wanted to take the package and I'm okay being laid off, or I could go do this like another support role in a customer service organization. That was a big jolt, having graduated from a good university, trying to make a career, and then going from that to actually doing customer service. But I needed the money, so I did the job. And in retrospective, that job actually led me to my current role, where I lead our customer service product suite at HubSpot as a GM. Between that period of 15 years, I moved to the US. I worked in a number of professional roles at Microsoft, at Salesforce for more than a decade, and then moved to HubSpot.
And I really loved hearing your story around how you pivoted into like the customer service role because of the sort of recessionary environment threw you in that position. I'm excited to get a little bit more into sort of the opportunities that a recession brings along and sort of how you make the most of the circumstances. But before we do that, I would love to go into product management as a field because you've experienced it throughout your career. And what is product management? I mean, I'm sure some people have seen that Venn diagram of, you know, UX, business, and tech, and sort of mm-hmm. how the product manager is like the intersection of all those three spheres. Like, how would you, does that resonate with you? What is your interpretation of product management?
I try to simplify it because I think one of my personal principles is fighting for simplicity in life and in business. So for me, product management basically boils down to structural problem solving and iterating till you make the end consumer or customer happy. And it doesn't even have to be a product or a service. So it requires structural thinking on what problems to solve, number one. Number two, it requires you to build a vision around that problem and the solution to solve it. Number three is you take that product or the solution to your customer. And number four is you keep iterating till you hit a point of perfection where you can move on and solve another problem.
Product management is such a growing space and there are so many versions of it out there. Like, what would you say is the difference between, say, product management and project or program management, which is also a really popular field out there in the tech industry?
Yeah. So I think one thing I want to set up is the titles that get used in tech interchangeably between different companies might mean different things. For example, I think Microsoft and I started for the longest time use program managers as the title equivalent to a product manager. The work that we did was product management, but the title is still program manager. But having said that, in actuality, the core differences between a product role and a project or program role is product is about why, what, and how, whereas project is more around when, right? Like it's more about getting a contained process to completion and ensuring that everybody is doing their part to success. Whereas product management is an iterative process. You define who you're solving for, what are you trying to solve, why is this relevant to the company, and then actually help take it to completion and iterate on it. So I think the purpose of both these roles are different. The thing that is common is some of the cross-functional stakeholder management influencing skills are relevant across both the roles.
And it sounds like also from your explanation before that the customer is quite central to the product management practice and always thinking customer first.
Yeah, absolutely. At HubSpot, we have this principle, customer at the center of everything. When I was at Salesforce, everything we did was customer-centric. And a lot of organizations, mostly B2B, are very, very focused on the customers because they have such a clean line to getting that feedback from the customers. They can talk to these people every day, every month. Not that you should all the time be talking to your customers. So it's a very customer service process. Having said that, like if you're managing an external project, let's say in a telco industry, you will definitely also talk to your customer, but not all the time because the requirements are pretty set in the beginning. And then it's more of a waterfall model, I feel like, managing through the process, as opposed to when you're developing a product for a collection of users, their requirements might be distinctive. So you have cohorts of users wanting one thing, a certain behavior, and you have to provide flexibility in the system so it could work for all of them.
And I mean, that complexity can create like challenges in actually figuring out what to prioritize and how to create something that works for a wide range of customers. How do you make decisions as a product, as a customer-centric organization on what are the features and components of the product that you prioritize to deliver like the best value for customers?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? Because you want to develop a product that can stand the test of time, like at least 5 to 7 years, but you almost always start with a narrow use case and then work your way to more a generic use case, as opposed to developing a generic product where you don't know who will buy it or who will use it. So at the end of the day, you're trying to answer three questions with whatever you're developing. Who's going to buy it? Who's going to use it? And are they going to love it? So the way I personally deal with this is like when we start, we have enough user research, both quantitative and qualitative, to define if this problem is worth solving. And by that, I mean, is it going to be beneficial for the customers? And is it going to be beneficial for the company? Because if it's going to be too cost heavy for the company for a foreseeable future, then that's also not a lucrative product to develop, right? On the other hand, if the customers are not interested or it's not as high on their list of problem pain points, then it's not a good product to develop. So after doing that user analysis, we have enough data to say that this problem is worth solving. And then it boils down to which cohort of users should we target first. So in my current role, or I've worked in the customer service products before as well, there's a number of personas. Like say you have a contact center, a call center person who you call when you run into an issue with your bank, you will call someone and someone is picking up the call on the other end, right? Helping you. That's one persona. The other persona is a manager who's actually managing these folks in the contact center, who's not actively taking calls or help requests, but sort of like guiding the agents. The third persona is someone who actually comes to your house to service your bike or service if you have a utility issue, right? So those are different kind of personas. So you boil down which persona is the main one that you're targeting. Once you have the main persona, then you go through the same prioritization exercise of knowing the problem pain points and sequencing them in the right order. So then when you do release the prototype, it makes sense for that group of users. And once you then receive good feedback, good success in terms of the numbers, then you start like iterating on and broadening the experience to other set of users. So that's, in my mind, there's two skills associated here, prioritization and sequencing. And both of those, there is tremendous amount of feedback loop that happens with customers, both qualitatively and quantitatively. Of course, you tie into competitive research internally on the other products you've developed, externally, what is the market doing? But the customers should come foremost on what their requirements are and what the product is solving for.
That makes sense. And I mean, at the end of that, how do you then measure the impact? You've gone through that whole process and that, you know, iteration of developing something that's relevant to the particular cohort of customers that you've prioritized. How would you know if you've achieved the results that you were hoping to achieve?
Before you start, you have certain set of hypotheses, right? How this product is going to function, who's going to buy it, what's going to be the revenue, what is going to be the engagement. There's different metrics to measure. But all in all, you define the North Star metrics or like the main key metric, which could be number of downloads in an app store, which could be number of accounts created, which could be active users, which could be number of licenses sold. And then you have 2 to 3 other secondary metrics that kind of help get you to that main metric. I think I personally cap and guide teams to cap it at like that 3 to 4 mark, as opposed to going bonkers with data. But that is what we measure throughout the process of maturity. So at every point you have some kind of like baseline with reference to another similar product or with reference to what happened in the market in terms of competition and how they grew, to be able to see if this is going to be successful. There's 3 outcomes, right? If this is already trending towards the metrics that you initially thought it would, which is great, then no changes needed. The second outcome could be it's not trending right and the metrics are not the way that you'd want as you get the results. And in that case, you have to decide, do you have to put more investment? Like, for example, is a product yet not achieved the minimum lovable status with the customers and you have to put in more features in there and that requires more investment? Or the third case, that users have just changed their mind and maybe the product is not as much needed as it was when you first started your journey. In that case, you have to decide to kill the product or service. And those are also hard decisions. But in my situation, the last 15 years, I've ended up canceling 2 of the smaller product lines because they didn't lead to the outcomes that that we wanted to drive.
Mm. And that's a very hard decision, right? Like to say no once you've already committed to a project, once you've realized that it just hasn't worked.
Yeah, it's a hard decision. And it's kind of governed by 2 things. One, as we are discussing, is this particular product or service itself and its own performance. The second is the economy and the priorities of the company. Like, let's say the economy we are in right now, a lot of companies will pivot to doubling down on what they do best, as opposed to investing in places that are newer to them or technology that's still relatively newer and nascent, because you have to choose and prioritize what to keep alive and what to sunset when the resources are limited, right? So it's a hard decision, but it happens in both of these situations.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, that is a really great place to pivot and discuss more about the environment that we're in, because right now, you know, we're definitely in a very difficult economic environment. We're moving to more of a capital restrictive environment. How does that impact product strategy?
I think there's 2 lanes of decisions that will happen. One set would be they would decide to double down, as we're talking about, in their product strategy, in areas they do well. Let's say they had a primary product and that product had 30-40% market share, and then they have a number of secondary products that had like 10-15% market share. So a number of companies would double down on that first product and try to increase that 30-40% to 50-60% instead of like reinvesting in the secondary products. That's one line of decisions that will happen. I don't know if you saw, there's a company called Intercom yesterday. They released a press note that they're going to double down on one line of their products really widely, and which was great to see, again, because that's a clean strategy. The other set of decisions that would happen is companies that have a lot of, that have scaled fast and that have a lot of open questions to answer and systems to build, to scale, they can take their time to build those systems in the next 2 years. And they would choose to invest in a set of new products and a set of new systems to scale those products, relying on the fact that when the market does go up and the economy opens up, they'll be ready to play the longer game. It just boils down to how much cash you have in terms of your company strategy and how much are you willing to risk. So companies who are sitting on a larger pile of cash can, of course, take the second decision and invest in platforms and products that are newer, whereas companies who are a little bit cash constrained might go to the first side and decide to do what they know best, right? I often think it's a period where some companies die down, some companies just survive, and some companies thrive. So those are the decisions that made at a company level, then also boil down or maybe boil up to reflect in product strategy. So that's kind of like one category of questions regarding the customers that will impact product strategy. The other categories around like people, right? Because at the end of the day, you can have the best strategy and it would mean nothing if you don't have people in seats who are still passionate and still want to put their 100% behind that strategy.
Yeah, it can be a tricky balance when so many different, when taking into account like so many different aspects of the business, not just the customers, but also like the people within the organization. I am reflecting a little bit on some other companies that have gone through challenges in the past few years. And one that comes to mind is Airbnb. I'm thinking back to something that a podcast episode that I heard with Brian Chesky of Airbnb, who talked about how there was a moment where he had to make like a significant number of layoffs. And it was a very difficult point in time for the company because people were canceling all their reservations. People didn't, you know, weren't comfortable, you know, going out and using Airbnbs. That was just not a thing because travel had just gone to zero. And so the business model itself, not just the product itself, but the full business model was upended. And that was a time of crisis where, you know, the leadership had to come together and think, okay, well, what can we do? Like, how can we be creative around the current circumstances? How can we repurpose the business to still provide value and then still be able to capture value from people who do want to use the Airbnb platform? And what I found interesting is how they moved away from like providing accommodation for travelers mm-hmm. to then their value proposition being, oh, like if you're working remotely, you know, Airbnb is your perfect option because you can just take your laptop, go wherever you want, and you can, within your country, you don't have to, you know, take a plane or anything. And, you know, you can have a great experience working remotely at one of these Airbnbs while also introducing standards for cleanliness and COVID safety, et cetera, within the Airbnbs. And that really helped Airbnb bounce back from a time where I genuinely thought, you know, maybe this business is at risk and might even go away in a few years. So that was a very impressive comeback. And yeah, and my thought is, I guess, to what extent do business have to think creatively in these times? Because in some cases, you're right, like there's an almost an existential risk at a time of crisis. And businesses have to think hard about like, what is what is our purpose? Like, what, you know, how do we actually provide value to customers in a time like this? Like, what is your advice to businesses sort of going through that period?
Yeah, that's a great story, right, with Airbnb. And what I take away from that story is one of like creativity, but also of like transparency, of being able to take these decisions and then ensure the organization know why they're taken. And the reason is, you could again have a great strategy, you could again have a lot of creativity, but if the people are still scared, the people who are left in the company, they don't have a sense of orientation, then all of this would not reap the rewards that we're talking about. So I think it does require a different kind of creativity in order to change the business model. I think there is a little bit more of that when you think about B2C companies like Airbnb. With respect to B2B companies, I think a lot less companies will fundamentally change what they stand for. I think what will happen is they will broaden their aperture for what all is possible if they're not cash constrained. Companies will decide to go from single app to a platform based model because they want to provide their users a one-stop shop to be able to do everything, because customers don't want to invest time and money in buying different products for different users and have all of these products work together. So I think that's what majorly will happen, or businesses should pay attention to. Also, if you are a platform company as opposed to a single app company, the chances of you going down under in this economy are much less than if you're relying heavily on just one thing. But I do think all of this boils down to the risk appetite that you can have based on your P&L.
And actually, going into the P&L side of things, I mean, you've been in roles where you've managed a P&L. How do you think about priorities as someone who's had to focus very much so on the profitability?
Yeah, I think one of the things I've discovered, this is of late in my recent role, I've been part of like 4 emerging businesses, both as someone who is part of the business or leading. And more recently, I've discovered that we as leaders don't partner as best with our partners on the finance side as we could. This is just my recent learning from last year, and I've tried to closely partner with finance. And the reason is, when we make prioritization decisions on product strategy, right, it's overwhelmingly anchored towards the target market opportunity, or what is the competition doing, or the possible revenue. It's very, very less anchored towards the cost structure that goes into building up this business. Because often we assume that there would be unlimited investment for a period of time, right? That's mostly, for most leaders I've known who have been part of emerging businesses, it's an afterthought in year 2, year 3. And so of late, like, we ran into a situation where we were doing something and we realized there's a fixed cost, and for a number of years, we would not cover that fixed cost with the revenue. And that led to a question that, even if it's like a good, like, let's say it's a high priority, is it the most important thing to be spending time on? Because we have these other things that we could do which don't have as high of a fixed cost. My learning was to have product leaders always partner very closely with finance leader, not only in terms of headcount, but also in terms of these decisions where infrastructure and platform as a cost is an investment.
Yeah, and that's so interesting you say that, because I think a lot of product leaders will say, oh, like, you know, we need to partner more with marketing, or we need to partner more with customer success to get their insights, or, you know, like every other function except, you know, the G&A and finance functions. And I say that because I'm in G&A. But yeah, I think that's so fascinating that you say that through this period, it's just so critical to partner with the finance team, because they play a huge role in supporting the strategy and helping model the best outcomes for the business.
Right, totally. A lot of us, including me, make the mistakes of seeing finance as a partner only in bad times or when you are doing headcount planning.
Yeah.
Although retrospectively, that's a big mistake, because they can help us prioritize and sequence, as well as other partners like sales and marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I'm curious, my last question on this part is, what are some mistakes that you've seen product managers make during uncertain times?
I'll speak about three things, two more on the product side and one on like personal careers of people in product management. So one is like making decisions without having backup options. Specifically during these times, when you're making a hard decision, you have to be sure of if that fails, what's the backup option? Like, is there an alternate path to succeed? So before making, whether it's like a strategy decision, have like 1, 2, 3 options and walk you through the options, because A, it will again signal clarity of thought process and competence in decision making. B, you have something to fall back on. So that's one thing. The other thing is around the contextual nature of decisions. A lot of times during this period, you know, you're taking fast decisions, you want to move fast, you want to shift resources, you want to ship product. And in that, you forget that the decisions you're making, nobody else knows about it in the company, right? So that contextual loss of information through levels of a company, if you are in a big company, leads to a lot of morale loss on people. So making sure that you are providing the context and why and over communicating to the point where it can feel repetitive is actually the right sort of communication. And then for product managers themselves, look, this is a hard time, right? You'd see layoffs, you'd see people moving around a lot, and you'd think like you should do something based on someone else's situation. And given like I've done this for a while, I've realized like your own situation is your own. Even if 5 of your friends decide to move a company or 5 of your friends were laid off, those are their situations that have nothing to do with you. So taking career decisions in the heat of the moment because of small incidences or something that's happened to someone else is probably not the right way to be managing your career during these times. It's mostly just being aware, working on your skill set and being steady.
Yeah, I think that's really great feedback because it can be a very stressful period, you know, to be looking at what's going on and then reflecting on how that impacts you and your personal circumstances as well as like your career circumstances. And so it's hard to sort of dissociate yourself with what's going on and be more considerate of your circumstances versus other people's. So I think that's really great advice. So I think that's all of the questions I have. That was a really great conversation, Purvi. I learned a lot about how do you develop product strategy? What does product management mean? And also how to innovate and build a profitable product during a recession, which is something that is just so topical right now. So yeah, really appreciate the conversation. Thank you so much. All right.
Thanks, Risha. Bye.
Don't forget to check out our more recent episodes where we connect with global female CEOs to explore how to make it to the top. Whether your ambition is to be an executive at a corporate, build a franchise, or pivot your traditional career, check us out. Be sure to give us a like or follow on LinkedIn, TikTok, or Instagram at Lattes with Leaders. Our mission is to hear the voices of women from around the world. So if you're an avid listener and want your voice heard through our platform, please reach out.